Good to see each and every one of you out here. We do have a number of visitors, and we're certainly glad that you've chosen to be here. I ask that you would take out your Bible and follow along as we're going to be studying God's Word this morning. We're going to mainly be looking at two chapters, which we'll get to in just a moment. But I would say, and again, this is my opinion, but one of the greatest challenges that husbands face is when their wives purchase furniture that says adult assembly required. It's where a challenge begins. It becomes a battle. Can you figure out how to put this chair? Can you figure out how to put this this whatever piece of furniture, a desk, whatever it may be, can you figure out how on earth it's supposed to fit together? You know, as husbands, we try to do it ourselves. We ignore the instruction manual. We say, how hard can it be? And we try. Only after failed countless efforts, we realize that we do need the instructions. But I've recently done this, and I realized most of the instructions, they don't even have any words on. All they have is pictures. They'll have a leg, and it shows a man screwing it to the left, and it says it has an X in it. And then it has a picture next to it with a guy screwing a leg into a chair to the right, and it has a smiley face next to it, and that's it. And we understand what it's doing. It's showing us that there's a right way, and there's a wrong way to go about assembling it. And we see this all the time, that there's a right way and a wrong way. There's a right way and a wrong way to bake a cake, a right way and a wrong way to drive a car. But spiritually, this remains true as well. There is a right way and a wrong way to handle the temptations that come our way. And I need us all to understand that we are not immune. It doesn't matter who you are or what you've done, you're not immune from temptation. The first man and the first woman, they were both tempted. David, a man after God's own heart, he was tempted on several occasions. And Jesus, the Son of God Himself, was tempted. And that lets us know that you and me, both of us, we are all going to be tempted. And please remember that being tempted is not a sin in and of itself. But rather, temptation is the invitation to sin, to indulge and to give in on what we are being tempted by. And so we can handle that invitation to sin in either the right way or the wrong way. And help us plainly see this. We're going to be looking at two different chapters this morning and two very different characters. For the wrong way, we're going to begin by looking at Samson in Judges chapter 16. And we will finish with the latter half of this sermon looking at the right way with Joseph in Genesis 39. But for now, I need you to turn over to Judges chapter 16. Judges chapter 16. And let's be clear, this is the wrong way. The wrong way to go about handling the temptations in your life when we look at the example and the life of Samson. And certainly there are many applications of this. A little bit of a longer reading, Judges chapter 16. So again, I hope your Bibles are out. Let's read verses 4 through 22 and get this text in front of us. It says, after this, he, being Samson, loved a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. And the lords of the Philistines came up to her and said to her, seduce him, and see where his great strength lies, and by what means we may overpower him, that we may bind him to humble him. And we will give you 1,100 pieces of silver. So Delilah said to Samson, please tell me where your great strength lies, and how you might be bound, that one could subdue you. Samson said there, if you bind me with 7 fresh bowstrings that have not been dried, then I shall become weak and be like any other man. Then the lords of the Philistines brought to her 7 fresh bowstrings that have not been dried, and she bound him with them. Now she had men lying in ambush in an inner chamber. And she said to him, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. But he snapped the bowstrings as a thread of flax snaps when it touches the fire, so the secret of his strength was not known. Verse 10, then Delilah said to Samson, behold, you mocked me and told me lies. Please tell me how you might be bound. And he said there, if they bind me with new ropes that have not been used, then I shall become weak and be like any other man. So Delilah took new ropes and bound him with them and said to him, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. And the men lying in ambush were in an inner chamber, but he snapped the ropes off his arms like a thread. Then Delilah said to Samson, until now you have mocked me and told me lies. Tell me how you might be bound. And he said there, if you weave the 7 locks of my head with the web and fasten it tight with the pin, then I shall become weak and be like any other man. So while he slept, Delilah took the 7 locks of his head and wove them into a web. And she made them tight with the pin and said to him, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." But he awoke from his sleep and pulled away the pin, the loom, and the web. And she said to him, "How can you say, 'I love you,' when your heart is not with me? You have mocked me these 3 times, and you have not told me where your great strength lies." Verse 16, "And when she pressed with him hard with her words day after day and urged him, his soul was vexed to death. And he told her all his heart and said to her, 'A razor has never come upon my head, for I have been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. If my head is shaved, then my strength will leave me, and I shall become weak and be like any other man.' When Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, she sent and called the lords of the Philistines, saying, 'Come up again, for he has told me all his heart.' Then the lords of the Philistines came up to her and brought the money in their hands. She made him sleep on her knees, and she called a man and had him shave off the 7 locks of his head. Then she began to torment him, and his strength left him. And she said, 'The Philistines are upon you, Samson.' And he awoke from his sleep and said, 'I will go out as other times and shake myself free.' But he did not know that the Lord had left him. And the Philistines seized him and gouged out his eyes and brought him down to Gaza and bound him with bronze shackles. And he ground at the mill in the prison. But the hair of his head began to grow again after it had been shaved." This text right here shows us very clearly the downfall of Samson and how it played out with Delilah. That he found himself in a situation that he very easily could have walked away from or never initiated in the beginning, but he allowed Delilah and her temptations to ultimately lead to the outcome that we finished in verse 21 and verse 20, that the Lord left him and he didn't even know. And it's for that reason that he serves as a great illustration and for the wrong way to handle temptation. And a lot of applications could be made of this, but we're going to look at 3. And the first is we see the wrong way of handling temptation is when we are fraternizing with the enemy. You know, 1 Kings chapter 3, verses 1 through 3, you don't have to turn there, but I put it there for your personal notes if you want to make a side note in the text, in margins of your Bible. But in that passage, it warns that Solomon loves many foreign women, is the description that is given. That the very people that God warned about his people intermarrying with, that if you get involved with people of other nations and other gods, that eventually that might make you compromise your belief in the true and the living God, Yahweh. And the very thing that he warned about, Solomon goes after. Solomon goes after these foreign wives. And yes, we're not talking about Solomon. I know we're talking about Samson, but Samson does the very same thing. We see that there are 3 women that appear in his life, and they all have one thing in common. That all 3 of the women mentioned in the life of Samson is that they come from cities or they come from areas of the Philistine people. It is the enemy of Israel during this time. He is associating himself and putting himself around those of the enemy. Some of you might be familiar with one of the biggest sports rivalries in the United States. It's that of Ohio State and Michigan. Big, fierce rivalry. So big that a lot of Ohio State fans refuse to say the word Michigan. They will only refer to that state as that team up north. And then the week of Ohio State, Michigan, and when that game takes place, they refuse to use the letter M in any of their writings on social media, on websites, whatever it may be. They cross the letter M out. They make it clear how they feel about their enemy being Michigan. And Michigan feels the same way about Ohio State. But if only Samson had practiced such prudence in realizing who his enemy was and what his job as a judge was. And God used his mistakes providentially, but we see that it led to a number of mistakes in his life. Like in Judges 16, verse 4, the verse we started with. Where is Delilah from? She's from the valley of Sorek. Sorek was just below Zorah, and that is one of the major cities of the Philistines, and that's where Delilah is from. And as the Philistines know how to find her and how to communicate with her, and her likewise, it shows us her interconnections with the Philistine people, that she likely is a Philistine. And over again in the Old Testament, leading up to the New Testament, there are all these warnings that God had warned about his people about spending time with those other nations and what that will do to you. And we see Samson not taking any heed to that. Samson was a military leader, a military force for God's people. And yet we see, instead of rescuing Israel from the Philistines, Samson can't seem to keep away. And brethren, when we are going to be more likely to be susceptible to temptations in our lives that come knocking on our door if we're associating with those that have different beliefs than us. If we are surrounding ourselves with ungodly associations, or maybe we're filling our mind with dirty language, with dirty music, or whatever we're watching on TV or on TV shows. If this is what we're doing with our life and with our time, we're getting maybe too close and too comfortable with the enemy. Instead of getting close, we need to use the wisdom that God has given us and get away. Samson didn't, and we are reminded of the fate that he suffered. The wrong way of handling temptation involves fraternizing with the enemy, but it also involves us repeatedly exploiting our own vulnerabilities. I'm a coach, and I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to get this, but what coach would want his opponents to know his weaknesses? Nobody. You're going to leave that to them to watch the film and let them try and figure it out and see if they can break you down. But who would do that against their enemy? Who would let them know what their weakness is? And yet, it appears as if that's exactly what Samson does. He has this great strength, this secret, where his strength comes from. And Delilah, from the very beginning, that's what she wants to answer. Remember in Judges 16, 7 through 9, that's the first of many appeals that she makes in saying, "Hey, tell me how you might be subdued." And that should probably get our attention right off the bat. Huh, I wonder why she wants to know that answer. But he gives her an answer of how he might be subdued. That, you know, if you get these seven bowstrings, they haven't been dried, then I'll become weak. And so she does that, and then she calls out and says, "The Philistines are upon you," and the next thing you know, he snaps out of it. And the cycle just continues two more times where he continues to tell her a falsehood about how he might be subdued. And again, you just might think that he might be a little bit suspicious of why she continues to ask these questions. The Bible doesn't reveal to us, we don't have an answer as to why Samson continues to give her these answers. I think it does go to show his arrogance. In his reliance on himself, as is a theme in the life of Samson and from Judges 14 through 17 until he learns at the very end of his life. But Samson tells Delilah where his weakness is, and he does it in a teasing and playful way. He does it in a playful way, but he gets closer and closer to exploiting his true vulnerability. Do you notice in the last recorded way that he told her how he might be subdued, he got really close to what it was? He mentions that it's the hair. Doesn't say that the hair has to be shaved, but I think from that instance we see that she's already beginning to break him down, and he's close to giving in and revealing his true source of strength. Would we act like this today, though? Would we be so foolish to exploit our own vulnerabilities to temptation, our own vulnerabilities to sin? How might this happen today? Think about this. Maybe if we know that we struggle with alcohol and with drinking, maybe we find ourselves with friends who we know that they drink, and in turn we set ourselves up for failure. Or maybe we struggle with pornography. We might find ourselves and put ourselves in a situation to be alone, to be unsupervised behind a screen of some type. Maybe we struggle with self-control and we might give ourselves free rein on our spending on the internet, or maybe it's our excess in eating habits. And the list can go on and on and on, but we put ourselves in many of these situations exploiting our own vulnerabilities. And when that happens, we can act just as foolishly as Samson did, inviting temptation in our lives. And that's why we need to heed what the proverb writer says. 14 and verse 6, where it says, one who is wise is cautious and turns away from evil. but a fool is reckless and careless. We cannot afford to be reckless with the temptations that come our way. And we can't put ourselves in a vulnerable situation like Samson. But another way that we see Samson handling temptation the wrong way is that he allowed these removable temptations to remain in his life. And I use the word removable for a purpose, because he never should have been around Delilah and the Philistines in the first place. He had no business associating with these people. In fact, very clearly at the beginning of the book of Judges, they were told to stay away from the other nations, and yet he keeps going toward them. And so he's allowing these removable temptations to just linger in his life. And please, let me just say, I understand that there are going to be some temptations in our lives that are not removable. Hear me out on that. Like, think about lust for a moment. Let's say somebody struggles with lusting for the opposite sex. It's not realistic to remove any and all contact with the opposite sex. There are things that you can do to minimize those temptations, and certainly I'm saying that we need to find a way to control ourselves. But there's going to be temptation that comes along with that, that we're going to have to find a way to manage and deal with. We can't just remove it all entirely. But with some sins, we can fail to remove the temptations that are associated with them to the point that they linger and they start to permeate in our lives. And it ought not to be so. You know, Judges chapter 16 and verse 16 shows us that there was a lapse in time. That Samson allowed Delilah to wear him down. Where it says day after day. That the appeals day after day, the appeals with time going on, it proved to be too much for Samson to bear. And it made him only more susceptible to give in. Now, one of the key themes from the life of Samson is the dominance of women in his life. And it is his interactions with these women that form the majority of what the biblical account has to say about his life. From his wife from the Philistines, from the harlot from Gaza, and Delilah from Sorek. They all have the Philistines in common. But they were all removable in the first place. He had no business being with them, and they lead to the ultimate demise and capture of Samson. One author said this. He said, Samson personifies the nation of Israel and their failure to separate from the nations around them. But I would go on to say that his life also embodies what Christians today look like when we fail to separate from the world around us. When we get closer and closer to sin until suddenly we find ourselves accepting that invitation to sin. And that's where we become guilty. We need to have the mental fortitude, the strength, and the courage to rid ourselves of temptation when it is removable. To keep far away from it that we may not give in. And there is so much more that we could look at when we think about the life of Samson in Judges chapter 16 and all the wrong ways to handle temptation. But I want to end on a positive note. Let's look at the right way to handle temptation. And go to Judges chapter 39. Genesis 39. Genesis chapter 39, we read across a very different story. Very different from that of Samson, we come across Joseph in how he handles similar temptation with the opposite sex, but in a much drastic and much better way. Let's read beginning in verse 6. Judges, you're going to be looking for Judges 39, you're not going to find it. Genesis 39 in verse 6. So he, being Potiphar, left all that he had in Joseph's charge. And because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance, and after a time his master's wife caught her eyes on Joseph and said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house, and he has put everything that he has in my charge. He is not greater in the house than I am, nor has he kept anything back from me except you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" And as she spoke to Joseph day after day, he would not listen to her, to lie beside her or to be with her. But one day, when he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was there in the house, she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out of the house. And as soon as she saw that his garment was left in her hand and fled out of the house, she called the men of the household and said to him, "See, he has brought among us a Jew to laugh at us. He came in to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And as soon as he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried out, he left his garment beside me and fled and got out of the house. And she laid up his garment by her until his master came home and told him the same story." And we'll pause there. A very different outcome in how Samson handled the temptation in his life and how Joseph handled the temptation that came his way. When we think about what young Joseph faced, it was as powerful temptation as one could be faced with. Where Potiphar's wife invited Joseph to lie with her, and she made her offer plain. She made it clear of what she desired. But let's finish by making three observations of the right way to handle temptation. And what we see Joseph doing is that he remembers God in his decisions. He could have offered many excuses for giving in to this temptation and lying with Potiphar's wife. And there is something that sticks out from this. Unlike Samson, Joseph is not choosing to be around Potiphar's wife. No, nor was it of his own choosing to be alone with this woman. She was all but forcing him into sexual sin, trying to. And that's what we see in verse 9, though. He was remembering God in his decision making. In everything that he did, verse 9, "How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" How many times with the decisions that we make do we say, "Oh, it was just an impulsive decision," or it happened so fast? When we say things like that, sometimes what we're doing is, well, we forgot about God for a second. We forgot to think through this wisely, to think about the consequences, to think about what might happen. But Joseph thought about that beforehand. How could I do this wicked thing against my master? How could I do this just wrong thing to begin with? How could I do this thing against God? And when we remember God in our decision makings, that means we know that we have a door of escape and we know when it's time to take it. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 13 was the passage that was running on the slides earlier this morning, where it says, "No temptation that has overtaken you that is not common to man. God is faithful and He will not let you be tempted beyond your ability, but with the temptation He will also provide the way of escape that you may be able to endure." Now, when Potiphar's wife caught him by the garment, saying, "Lie with me," Joseph left the garment in her hand and he fled. He knew where the exit was and he took it. Fleeing from temptation, especially sexual temptation, that is the scriptural, that is the right way to handle temptation. No matter how drastic fleeing may seem, it is the best approach, the best practice when it comes to avoiding temptation. And Joseph was prudent to do just that. And that's why 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 18 echoes the same sentiment, where it says, "Flee from sexual immorality. Every other sin a person commits is outside the body, but sexual immorality, but the sexually immoral person sins against his own body." And so there's the answer. That's the right way to handle this type of temptation is flee from it. And we do that when we remember God in our decision making. He could not sin against God. He would not. Job 28 and verse 28 is not on the PowerPoint. Job 28, 28. And then we'll go to Proverbs 22, 3. It says, "Behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to turn away from evil is understanding." You want true wisdom? That's when you fear the Lord and know what it means to turn away from evil, to turn away from temptation. And so that means we need to be proactive with the temptations that come our way. Like Proverbs 22 and verse 3 says, "The prudent sees danger and hides himself, but the simple go on and suffer for it." If I were you, I might put Proverbs 22 and verse 3 in Genesis 39 and in Judges 16. Because that's a verse that highlights the difference between Samson and Joseph. One that was simple and one that was wise. But another right way to handle the temptation that come our way is when we keep in mind that it may require us to gladly bear the punishments that come for doing what is right. When we resist the temptation and the call to sin, sometimes that's going to put immediate consequences in our path. Sometimes punishments will be the result, and maybe they'll be external punishments. Because you say no to the temptation, maybe you'll be mocked, maybe you'll be belittled, maybe you'll be persecuted because of it. Maybe the consequences will simply be internal, struggles that nobody else knows you have going on, the struggles that leave you feeling empty, complete, torn, and that your body wants something so bad, but you know that God's will must win out. Will you gladly bear the punishments that come your way in order to resist temptation? You think about it. How was Joseph repaid for fleeing from the temptation from Potiphar's wife? Not very good. We stopped in the text, but as it goes on to say, she falsely accused him of rape. A punishable offense of death. Not in just Israelite law, but in Egyptian law as well. Because he fled, his life was placed into immediate danger, immediate jeopardy, because he ignored and ran away from that temptation. But we think about it, he was persecuted. He was dealt with unjustly. Joseph, for righteousness' sake and for doing the right thing. And hopefully that makes you think about what is said in 1 Peter chapter 3. Said about Christ in that context, but even if you should suffer for righteousness' sake, you will be blessed. That means that when we endure troubles and persecution for righteousness' sake, it will ultimately bring about blessings. And I know at first it probably didn't seem like that for Joseph. But the fact that he was allowed to live was a blessing in and of itself. That Potiphar had enough leniency with him because of his character and the man that he was, that he did not kill Joseph. That he's thrown in prison, and yet from there, it's the rags, the riches stories as he rises through the Egyptian ranks. And you think about Jesus as well. That he suffered for crimes he did not commit either. And he gave his life on a cross. And what blessings come from that? The greatest blessing of them all, that we can have the forgiveness of sins because of what happened on the cross and the resurrection of Christ. And so when we find ourselves suffering punishments for doing what is right, brethren, we find ourselves in good company. Caving into temptation will be the easy route. Temptations tempt us for a reason. That's part of the name. It's something that appeals to us. It's something we desire. If Joseph gave in to the temptations of Potiphar's wife, he may have never been caught. He very easily could have justified it. Many in today's society would, cut him some leniency for what happened. But by refusing, he put his whole life in jeopardy. And that reminds us that saying no to the temptations in our life and turning away from it may put our life in jeopardy at times as well. Saying no to peers and coworkers that maybe want you to violate your beliefs. Maybe family members that are trying to get you to compromise your convictions. There's consequences when we take a stand for what is right. You see, resisting temptation the right way is not always going to be the easy way, but it is the path that we must choose. And the last way that we'll go over the right way to handle temptation is that we need to continue fighting off every temptation. Keep fighting. There were three words that actually prompted this sermon. And they're the three words that link the story of Judges 16 and Genesis 39. Some of you already maybe know those three words. It was day after day. Day after day, Delilah wore Samson down. Day after day, Potiphar's wife tried to wear Joseph down. But he continued to fight off the temptations that she came to him with. Genesis 39 and verse 10, it's as she spoke to Joseph day after day, he would not listen to her to lie beside her or to be with her. That verse lets us know that Joseph made up his mind, that he was resolved that he would not yield to temptation. I appreciate Brother Randy for the quick change there and singing that song. Remember the lyrics that we just sang, "Yield not to temptation, for yielding is sin. Each victory will help you some other to win." If you give in to temptation, it only leads to problems. It only leads to more chaos in our lives. But if we successfully resist, it only builds us up. It gives us confidence to overcome in the future, just like Joseph did day after day. He wouldn't listen to her. And we'll finish with James 4, 7 and 8, where it says, "Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded." Brethren, it is not enough to simply resist temptation. Because as we studied in Bible class this morning, we know the nature of Satan, that he will be back with more crafty ways to try and tempt us when he's inviting us to sin, inviting us to indulge and give in on our passions. And so, yes, we are commanded to resist the devil and to flee from him, but we must also, on the other hand, draw near to God. If God is with us, who can be against us? And so let's cling to Him and His Word, and that we may handle temptation like Joseph in the right way. There certainly is a wrong way and a right way to handle temptation. And I hope this lesson helps you and helps me to give us the tools to be better prepared to handle the temptations that come our way, that we may be like a Joseph and not like a Samson. But in the same way that there is a right way and a wrong way to handle temptation, there's a right way and a wrong way when it comes to salvation. Mark 16 and verse 16 says, "Whoever believes and is baptized will be saved, but whoever does not believe will be condemned." This informs us that we must believe and be baptized if we wish to be saved. That is the right way to go about it. Are you willing to do just that this morning? You believe that Jesus Christ died on the cross, and through His sacrifice you can have the forgiveness of sins, and you're ready to repent of the sin in your life, confessing Him as the Son of God, we would be more than happy to baptize you for the forgiveness of sins. You can begin your walk with Jesus this morning. If you're subject to heaven's invitation anyway, we invite you to come to the front as we stand and sing the song selected. Who will